Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, 95.1 FM and, of course, 1080 AM radio since 1968, 50 years coming up in September. Well, it's an overcast day today, and it is the 27th day of March, and the year is 2018, and I have a very interesting guest in studio. I had him in studio with another very interesting guest a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, and I invited Brad Craviel to come on in and chit-chat one-on-one. He suggested that he wouldn't be interesting, and I said, of course, everybody is interesting, so thank you very much for coming up, Brad. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Wayne.
Now, let's identify who you are. First of all, you are from Rochester?
Actually, Wayne, I live outside of Lake City, Minnesota.
Oh, okay, Lake City. And are you involved in that community there?
Well, we've lived there since 1993, so
okay.
Coming up on 25 years. My wife and I moved there from the Twin Cities and raised our children there. And so, yeah, I guess you can say we're involved in the community through all the high school sports and that type of thing.
The reason I ask that, maybe I've asked this before, but there's a couple down there that used to run the Lake City Ambassador program. They used to call it Queen and Princesses.
Okay.
And they'd go around the various communities representing Lake City during the big celebration.
Sure.
They have. One of them has... The guy has real long hair. Good-looking guy, real long
hair. Boy, it doesn't ring a bell.
Okay.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Anyhow, they're very active in the community, and I just you know, I always like to connect.
Sure.
Now, I have another question for you. Let's see. A week ago today, I had to go to Rochester to see my prosthetist, whose office is on 4th and 4th.
Oh, the limb lab.
Yeah, the limb lab. You know that?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Brandon Sampson?
Yep. Oh. I don't know Brandon, but I know his business, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyhow, as I was driving in, I got off on, not on 2nd Street, but I got off on, what do they call that circle? You get off the 52.
On Civic Center Drive,
thank
maybe?
You.
Yep.
And I went Civic Center Drive, and as I'm starting to go east, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a big building there that says Home Federal Savings and Loan.
Yep.
Is that?
That's my bank. That's our bank.
Okay.
That's our headquarters in Rochester.
When I looked at it as I drove by, I said, I look at that all the time.
Sure.
Find out what time it is, find out what the temperature is, find out what the community is doing. And I go,
yeah, that's
hey.
Our headquarters. That's
okay.
Our headquarters, Wayne. That's where I work.
Well, so now every time I can, hopefully I don't have to go down very often, but I'll think of you.
Well, next time you stop in and see me.
Okay, sounds like a deal. Another thing that is interesting in regards to your being in studio today is that you had contacted me. I don't know if you contacted me or the radio station and then to me. About the fact that you had a very interesting gentleman from the Rochester Symphony Orchestra, the maestro, and you thought that he would be interesting on my show. And we connected, and you brought him up here, and his name is Jerry
Lentz. Yep.
And what an interesting gentleman.
Isn't he amazing?
Yeah.
He's amazing. And as I mentioned last week, you know, I listen to your show a lot when I'm out on the road in the car. And I hear how you interview guests and how conversational and personal it is. And then I'm on the board of the Rochester Symphony Orchestra and Chorale. And so I attend the concerts and I see what a great maestro Jerry is and how he explains the music in a very conversational and approachable way. And I thought, these two guys got to meet.
Yes, and it was a pleasure, and he's going to come back.
Is he? Great.
I invited him to come back because we concentrated on a little bit about you and then, of course, about the events that were coming up, and et cetera. Yesterday I had a guy on that is a professor of philosophy at St. Olaf College and a boxing coach.
He's the boxer I listened to you yesterday.
Oh, okay.
He's fascinating. Now, you've had him on before, haven't you?
A couple of times,
yeah.
And I really got a kick out of him. I started going back to boxing, he says, Wayne, we're here to talk about philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he indicated that I was doing a good job in asking good questions. If you listened, you heard that. But, you know, I'm kind of going like, now what do I talk about?
Sure.
I don't know, existentialism or whatever he was talking about. But he's going to come back, too. And he invited me to attend a class that he teaches up at St. Olaf.
Wow, what a great opportunity.
Yeah, sit in the back of the room and just, I haven't been in a classroom.
And you don't have to worry about being graded.
True. And that was another thing he talked about is I want to know, how do you grade? And when you think about it, how do you grade? If it's my opinion, you know, do you do spelling and things like that? I think it's a little deeper than that. But yeah, you amazed me because I misjudged your age, and I thought you were probably around, you know, 44.
Thank you, Wayne.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I'll tell you how old you are, okay? You are, don't tell me. Okay. Ooh, 58?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Actually, 59.
Just had a birthday?
Yeah, in January. You bet.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
You don't look 59 at all. I mean, you've got the hair on your head and all of that stuff, and you look very young for your age.
Thank
you. Graduated in 1977.
That's right.
And I'm going to play bumper music from 1997 to see if you can pick up on that.
Okay.
And I'm going to open this up and see what I've got coming. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I remember most of those. Now, the question is, do you remember what great movie came out in 1977, the year you were a senior?
I'm going to guess Star Wars or Grease, maybe?
Star Wars.
Okay. Okay. I remember going to see it in the theater.
I remember seeing it, too. And I'm a little bit older than you, but I was pretty fascinated by that. And when you compare it to today's, I mean, you know, it's a world of difference.
Yeah,
it looks like an old black and white movie or something.
Looks like a cartoon.
So you're in the banking business.
Yep.
And where were you born?
I was born in Freeman, South Dakota, which is a small town about 50 miles southwest of Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Oh, okay. Did you pay attention to TV news when you were a kid growing up there?
You know, I actually grew up in a southwestern Minnesota town by the name of Mountain Lake, which is about 100 miles west of here. And we had one channel on our TV, and that would have been the CBS channel out of Mankato, KEYC.
Oh, yeah.
And so I grew up on Walter Cronkite and Eric Severide and Harry Reasoner, those guys.
You're naming some great people.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just, as a little kid, I was always interested in the news. Lived on the farm. And again, we only had one channel, so there wasn't a lot to watch. But
I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but it's worth mentioning again. KEYC, there's a fellow down there that was a sales manager, John, and really a nice guy. And he was in the station, of course, was a member of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, and I was president for a couple of years there. And he invited me down to check it out. And I went down, and what really amazed me is that Oprah Winfrey charges stations to air her program. This is back in 94 or 5. But they get it free in Mankato, because they're the only outlet.
Really?
They couldn't, like up in the cities, they can peddle it to the four radio, or five, whatever they have up there, TV stations. But in Mankato, they got to sell what they call adjacencies and inserts to Oprah Winfrey without having to pay her.
Wow.
And that's a big deal.
Sure.
A big deal in dollars. So that's my memory. And I have good friends at Mankato. What radio station did you listen to when you were growing up in Mountain Lake?
Well, again, I was probably influenced by what we could get. You know, we had limited FM back then. And I grew up on a farm. So I would typically listen to or got started listening to whatever my dad had on the radio on the tractor or in the combine when he was in the field, because I'd take over from him when I'd get home from school or whatever. So a lot of WCCO AM
All right.
back in the 70s, so I remember all of those names. and WCAL. And at that time, it was WCAL AM, as I recall.
Oh, that's a long time ago. You know what? We started in 68.
Okay.
And at that time, WCAL was, I think, 970 on the dial.
Yep.
And they had to share that frequency with the University of Minnesota.
Was so that KUOM? Maybe,
yes, I believe it would have been. Yep. So they had the daytime, and I think the U had the nighttime. And they
Split it at noon or something like that.
Whatever it was. Yep. Pretty interesting. Then, of course, they built that 100,000-watt giant and moved the tower out to Rosemount because they were trying to serve the city.
Sure.
And the Twin Cities, I should say. And then, of course, NPR bought them out for $10 million. Kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I bring that up, I should just leave it alone, Wayne. It's been many, many years. But anyhow, it's 9:15 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Brad Krabiel is my guest on Kim Radio from living in, Lake City, and have been there. How many children do you have?
Well, Wayne, we have, my wife Beth and I have two boys, two sons, and they're grown up already. Ben is 29, or will be 29. And Andrew was 26, and they both graduated from St. Olaf College here in Northfield.
Oh, another connection.
Yep.
Are you a grandparent yet?
Nope. No, okay. No grandparent. No grandkids yet.
Is your wife excited and waiting for that to happen?
Oh,
someday?
Sure. Of course. Yeah.
You know, you'll find once you become a grandparent, you're going to find you have more time for them than you did your own kids because you're building a career and all that, and you'll really enjoy that. What's your wife's name?
Her name is Beth.
Beth, okay.
Yep.
What is that short for Bethany?
No, that's just Beth.
Beth, all right.
Yep, Beth.
So you grew up on a farm,
mm-hmm.
And how many acres?
I think at the peak, which would have been in the late 70s, early 80s, I think Dad had about 600 acres.
Oh, that was pretty good size then. Now, what gets me, though, is Lake City, and, you know, when you think farming, you think of flatland.
Sure.
And Lake City, to me, is all
hills
and, of course, the huge lake.
Mm-hmm.
And coolies.
Yeah.
You like that name?
I like that name. Yep.
You know how I know they call it the Coolie region?
How's that?
I used to work in Tomo, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And La Crosse was part of the Coolie region.
Sure.
Which are all those big hills and all that. And it's French for all those big hills and that coolie. And they're really coolie. So where would have 600 acres have been from Lake City?
Well, you got to remember, Wayne, that I grew up in southwestern Minnesota by Mountain Lake, Minnesota.
Mountain Lake, that's...
Yeah, Mountain Lake, and that was flat as a pancake there. Just the opposite of what I live in now. I live out in the country south of Lake City, and I laugh now about it because as a kid out there in southwest Minnesota, I used to spend hours going back and forth with a tractor in a straight line. When you'd get in the car, you'd drive for miles. There were no curves in the road, no hills. And I used to dream about what it must be like to farm contours and have something less boring than just going back and forth. Little did I know that I would wind up living in the Coulee region of southeast Minnesota.
Mountain Lake, is that near Marshall or Windham?
It's close to Windham. If you know where Windham is, it's about 10 miles east of Windham on Highway 60.
Okay.
And about 40 miles or 50 miles west of Mankato on Highway
60.
Yeah.
Okay, which of course starts over in Kenyon.
Yeah.
And now I got it. So you had... siblings, that's what I wanted to know about.
Sure.
And did I already ask you that?
No. Wayne, I have two sisters.
Okay.
My older sister, Christine, is a school teacher near St. James.
Okay.
And my younger sister, Allison, is a district court judge in St. Peter.
How much older is Christine?
She's 5 years older than I am, 5.5 years older.
And how about Allison?
Allison is 2 years younger than I am.
Okay.
That's
So Christine had to babysit you when you were, you know, 8 years old.
Oh,
or
yeah.
So.
Yeah. She had, was a real disciplinarian, as I recall, when mom and dad would go away and leave her with us two young brats.
I bet she took advantage of that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What about your family? Do they accept the fact that Allison is a lawyer?
Well, yeah, we knew a long, long time ago that Allison was going to be a lawyer. I could have told you that back when we were in grade school.
Why?
Just that she had as a strong opinion. She's a smart, smart lady, and she's just a real blast to be around. But I knew that she would do something like that. Yeah.
No, she's a judge now,
yeah.
So she's not practicing. Was she with the public defender's office before being a judge, or a private practice, or both?
No, she was actually. We all moved to the Twin Cities, us kids did, for a period of time, and Allison was actually an attorney that worked with the police force in Minneapolis.
Oh,
and so that's kind of how she got her start, and then moved down to the St. James area, Medelia area, and was a district court judge there, and then. Wound up where she's at now.
Now, who did she know? Was that an elective position or appointed?
That was an appointed position, and that would have been in about 2002, I think, that she was appointed down in Watonwan County there, and that would have been Jesse Ventura.
Oh, really?
Who appointed her.
Did she have a connection with him?
No.
No? Okay, no. He just recommended, and he said, let's do it.
Yep.
All right. And, you know, I was trying to be humorous. You know, does your family accept having a lawyer in the family? Everybody knows I like to tease lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Where would we be without them?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You mentioned she worked for the Minneapolis Police Department. She'd be real busy right now.
Yeah, yeah.
That terrible thing up there.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues and a lot of challenges in those metropolitan markets to running a police force, that's for sure.
So did you go to Mountain Lake grade school, junior high? What's her school district back in the 70s? What was it like?
It was, K through 12.
Okay.
And all in one campus. Mountain Lake's a small town. It's about 2,000. It was about 2,000 back then.
Yeah.
I would say at that time, Wayne, probably 75% to 80% of the students in our class were farm kids.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, they were all farm kids. Boy, I bet you I could count on one hand maybe the number of kids that are still there or students that are still there that are farming, because most of us, as farms got bigger, we all looked for employment elsewhere.
So you got teased the city slickers instead of the city slickers saying, oh, you guys smell like manure.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has, happened.
No, that's
so
right.
Tell me about the farm. Let's see, if you were doing the farming back in those days, my recollection is, corn and soybeans hit the roof for a while.
Yeah.
And, of course, did you have dairy also?
No, we had very little livestock. My dad was a corn and soybean farmer, but he was also kind of always involved in something else. So he would, he hauled grain. So he had a semi, and he would haul grain from the local elevator to places like Minneapolis, St. Paul, Mankato, Red Wing, which is one of my first memories of Northfield, because he used to drive to Red Wing with a semi, and I would take every opportunity to ride along with him in the summertime. And I clearly remember taking this right-hand turn by your fire station down here.
Yeah.
And driving 19
left-hand
over
turn.
Yep, or left-hand turn. Yep.
Okay, well, you got, little did you know that you were going to go to St. Olaf.
Yeah, and now I didn't go to St. Olaf, but my boys did. Boys would go, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was it like on the farm? I have had the pleasure of talking to farmers from, that were Second World War veterans, and what it was like with no running water, no electricity, the food, the animals on the farm, they ate and all that. But, compared to today, the equipment that the farmers use today is night and day compared to what you were using back then. So let's start with your grandparents on your father's side. Were they farmers?
They were farmers too, yeah. Yep. And farmed with horses. And, of course, my dad was old enough that he remembered farming with horses yet as well. But by the time he was probably, 10 or 11, they had tractors already. And, of course, his mom and dad farmed during the war. which was difficult to get equipment if you could get it at all then. So I think some farmers wound up relying more on their horses again because fuel was difficult to get. That was back in South Dakota. And then by the time my parents moved to Minnesota, then everything was mechanized already.
Okay, my guest this morning is Brad Krabiel, and we're talking about his parents and grandparents. So did you get to know both your grandparents? A lot of people died when they were little children. Let's talk about those grandparents. Sure. from your dad's side.
Sure. So I had two sets of grandparents. I was fortunate to know both of them. They were young enough yet, and I was born early enough, I guess, that I got a chance to know them, all four of them, really well. My father's parents were from South Dakota, and my grandpa was born in 1900, and my grandmother was born in maybe about 1904 or something like that. She was a little younger. He farmed out in outside of Freeman, South Dakota, until he retired, and then he moved into town and bought a cabinet shop, and he made cabinets for the people in town then.
Now, to get the situation now, he moved into town in South Dakota.
Yeah.
But you weren't living there as a kid growing up.
I was born there, as I mentioned, in 1959, and then my parents moved to Mountain Lake, Minnesota in about 1964. So I've been 5 years old.
And how did that work that they moved out of the homestead, for example?
Well, that town of Freeman, South Dakota was kind of unique for a town of 2,000 people or maybe 1,500. It had a junior college there as well as an academy, a private academy, and a church-based junior college, Freeman Junior College. My mother was from Mountain Lake, Minnesota. She grew up on a farm there. She went to college her first year in Freeman, or when her first year out of high school, and she met a young guy there who was a year younger than she was, my dad, who was a senior at the academy. And romance kind of took over, and my dad wound up enrolling in that college, I guess the story goes, for one semester, and found out that while he loved my mother very much, college was not his thing, and he promptly hitchhiked to California, or drove a car out to California.
Cool.
With a buddy. That would have been after the war, and he was going to find a job out there. That didn't turn out, and so he hitchhiked back by himself from South Dakota, or from California to South Dakota. That would have been about 1949, 1950. And when he got back here, then the romance continued, and they were married, and they lived on a farm in town for about 4 years, 5 years, and then moved to Mountain Lake, where my mother was from.
So did they take over her parents' farm?
Yeah.
That's how that worked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, my grandpa on my mother's side, my grandma and grandpa, my mother's side, he was a farmer in Cottonwood County, and he had a farm for each kid, basically. He had three kids.
Wow.
Two of them wound up back in Mountain Lake, and my dad was, my mother was one of them, and that's where we settled then, and they raised our family.
So you had aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
And therefore cousins.
Oh, yeah.
Your age bracket, your
yeah,
cousins?
Yeah, they were, for the time, they were relatively small families. We had three kids on my mom's side. She had two siblings, and same with my dad. He had two siblings. And so I think I had maybe 12 cousins, something like that.
Yeah, you know? And you lived close by on farms that abutted each other?
Pretty close, yep. And yeah. within biking distance, so we could ride our bikes over to each other's houses.
Do you know, being in the banking business, do you know if the turnover of acreage to children back in the late 40s, early 50s, was a heavy tax burden on the children? And what is it today?
Yeah. You know, over time that's changed, Wayne. As land keeps inflating in price, you know, the politicians and the IRS has looked at increasing the size of that estate before there's estate taxes that hit. But again, it's very difficult because as land fluctuates in value, there are some families that do get caught in that where the mom and dad pass away and they don't have their estate plans in place. And now all of a sudden they're subject to an estate tax when they need to transfer that land to others.
And then, of course, there's the horrible thing of divorce.
Yeah.
And I believe Minnesota's a 50-50 state. And if that farm is turned over while there is a marriage, whether it be the woman or the man's parents' farm that they inherited or whatever, the spouse that is getting the divorce gets half of that farm, which to me sounds really unfair.
Yeah.
And if you have to make it up in cash, I imagine in your business you probably have had people that came in and said, you know what, I'm going through a divorce, and we have 600 acres worth $600,000, and
her lawyer
wants half of that.
There are over my career, there have been loan requests, the reason for the request is a divorce settlement that needs to be handled and financed somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That can be, really stop a person in their place.
Yeah.
You know, like, holy cow, this is my family's farm for three generations, whether it's the man or the woman.
Yeah.
It is 9:30, and we've been conversing with a gentleman called Brad Krabiel out of Lake City, Minnesota. And we're going to talk about a place called the QB, the Quarterback Club in Northfield. And, of course, their breakfasts are served until 10 o'clock every single morning, Monday through Saturday. And the breakfasts are absolutely delicious, very inexpensive, and they serve you quickly. You walk in and you say to Lori, I want bacon and eggs, sunny side up, and I want wheat toast and a side of malted meal. She'll say, okay, have a seat, and by the time you're comfortable, her husband, Steve, has it all prepared and gets it to you. It's quite a place. Locally owned, locally managed by Dale Finger, who worked there as a kid in high school. And we can't forget their baby-back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness just oozing all over them in the form of their special sauce. And they have a third of a rack, a half of a rack, and a full rack available at the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, Minnesota. We will be back with Mr. Krabiel in just a moment.
Let us help you maximize your earnings with a certificate of deposit from Community Resource Bank. Invest in a 60-month CD at 2% or a 48-month at 1.75 annual percentage yield, or choose a 54-month bump option at 1.70% APY. Get the best deposit rates around with Community Resource Bank in Northfield, Cannon Falls, and Roseville, the banker's good friends. $25,000 minimum deposit required. Penalty for early withdrawal may reduce earnings. Other rates and terms are available. Member FDIC.
All right, America. H&R Block has some good news. For a limited time only, you could get a refund advance loan of up to $3,000 the same day you file at Block. That's right. You could get up to $3,000 today. No interest. Told you it was good news. To learn more or find participating locations near you, visit hrblock.com. Get your taxes, one. Optional tax refund related loan from BofI Federal Bank. Not your tax refund. $500, $750, $1,250, or $3,000 loans offered. Approval of loan amount based on expected refund and other conditions. Funds loaded on prepaid card. Tax returns may be e-filed without applying for this loan. Fees for other products or features may apply.
H&R Block, 1300 Bolenbacher Drive in Northfield. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5. Walk-ins are welcome or call 645-6281 for an appointment.
Ladies and gentlemen, we must announce that today at 3 o'clock on KYMN Radio, the Minnesota Twins take on the Nationals. And the opener, the regular season, begins on Thursday. And the game will be on KYMN Radio all season long. And Thursday's game is at Baltimore, and the starting time is 1:30. This, in the background, is number 9 song in all of 1977, the year my guest graduated from high school, Brad Krabiel. Can you name this tune?
Star Wars.
Amen. Remember who did it? Bet you don't.
John Williams.
Mako. I wouldn't know that. At 9:33, we're talking farming here on Kim, a friend you can count on. And Brad, we're talking about the fact that you were a farmer out in Mountain Lake, Minnesota. And you, of course, got an opportunity to drive farm equipment farm trucks,
sure.
farm cars when you were just a kid?
Yeah, probably before it was legal for me to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yep.
didn't farm kids get licenses earlier than city kids?
Yeah, we got a farm permit, as yeah. I recall. And I think at the time, Wayne, you needed to be 16 years old to get a driver's oh. license. But at 15, you could get a farm permit, but it was only supposed to be used for farming purposes.
Right. Did you ever take the pickup into town and not be for farming purposes?
Every trip was a farm purpose.
Every okay. That's what I told the IRS one time. I said, when you're in the business of what I was doing back in the 70s, everything I did was related, you know.
Sure.
If I had to go to Viking games, I had to go there to cover the game.
Yeah. So it was deductible, Wayne? Is
yeah.
that what you were saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
were the good old days.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you rotate soybeans and corn. And what about your first bicycle? I always ask that question.
You know, my first bicycle came from a used store. Neighborhood used store. It didn't even have pneumatic tires on it. They were hard rubber tires.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a tricycle?
Kind of like those wheels,
yeah.
but it had two wheels on it, and it was a half size or whatever they called them, 20-inch bike. And I really didn't like that bike very much because it was old. It was all rusty, and fortunately, my grandpa backed over it with his car.
Okay.
And not on purpose, and I didn't park it there, but he backed over it. So then I got a little different bike. It was a used one, but it had rubber tire or air tires on it, pneumatic tires. But again, you know, we lived on a farm on a gravel road, so there wasn't any place to really ride a bike anyway.
Yeah.
It was a big deal to be able to ride your bicycle on a tar surface, but.
Were the schools in Mountain Lake, K through 12, all in one building?
They were all on one campus, and they were all connected, you know.
Oh, okay.
But they were the original high school that started, and then they would build a new addition on, like gym, like in the 40s or whatever. And so it was spread out, a pretty good-sized school at the time.
Well, you had a class reunion last year.
I did.
Did you go?
No.
Okay.
No.
Did you go to any of them?
You know, I think I went to my 10-year class reunion, as I recall, which was a lot of fun. But then after that, we all got spread out so far, and I'm not sure if they had if they have had class reunions after that.
Okay.
You know, it's tough when you get certain kids in the school that tend to be the organizers, and if they move away or whatever, it's tougher to get people together. So,
well, when you went to the 10-year class reunion. Were you and Beth married at the time?
We were married, yeah.
So you went to show off your trophy
oh, yeah,
wife.
Yeah, and everybody told me I married up.
Yeah, okay, I get it. 10-year, in all the years that I've been around going to class reunions, the 10th one I thought is when it had most impact on opinions of others. People that you might not have found attractive end up being, wow.
Yeah.
And people you thought wouldn't make it, you think, holy cow, they're a
yeah.
lawyer?
Yeah.
Or people you thought would burn up the world are, you know, lazy.
Yeah. yeah.
That 10-year class reunion, still have hair and stuff
oh, yeah.
like that.
Yeah. They still so. Kind of look like they used to.
Yeah.
But where
yeah.
they wound up is might be completely different yeah. than what you expected.
I've gone to the 55th. And I got a 60th
wow.
coming up. And I remember reading the Northfield News when I first came to town because I was from St. Paul. And, you know, they didn't put class reunion pictures in the newspaper. But here, of course, they did. And they had a class reunion, 50th class reunion. And I looked at those pictures and I thought, they're all still standing?
Yeah.
You know, 50 years,
yeah.
holy. And
yeah.
then, boy, the time flies.
So what neighborhood in St. Paul did you grow up in?
Well, if you're familiar with St. Paul, did you live there?
Yeah, I lived there 10 years.
Okay, I will tell you that I bet I know your neighborhood.
Okay.
Because I lived all over St. Paul.
Really?
We always moved in the fall. My mom was staying 1 month ahead of not paying rent. Sounds crazy, but that and I got so sick and tired of moving refrigerators and stoves and beds and couches and upstairs and all that I said I'd never would ever move again without hiring a professional, and I've lived up to that standard. So where did you live?
Well, Beth and I lived in Merriam Park for a little bit, and then we also moved, we bought a house in McAllister Groveland, so very close to McAllister College on Fairmont Avenue is where I had both of our kids, and we lived there for 10 years.
Okay, does this intersection sound familiar? Marshall and Hamlin?
Yes.
There's a gas station on that corner?
Tracy?
Yeah.
It used to be Tracy.
Yes,
Oil, right?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to tell this story, and I'm sure some of you listeners have heard this before, but you haven't. And Brad Crabiel, my mother and my sister, 1 year older, and I moved in that brick house that was just west of the Tracy's gas station. And the lower level of that brick house, he stored batteries and tires and other stuff. And then he had a small apartment upstairs. And in the backyard, there were two huge tanks that he kept his gasoline in. I mean big, round ones.
Yeah.
And there was an apple tree there. And they produced the most delicious apples. I never forget that. But my room was about as big as this studio or smaller. And it had a window in it facing Marshall. And they had a perpendicular sign that stuck out. And it said, gas for less. Gas for less.
Oh, my.
Blinking on and off. And I'd go to bed.
In your window.
Yeah. I mean, it was right there. If I opened that window, I could touch it.
Sure.
And I would go to sleep counting, see how many gas for less, gas for
instead
less.
Instead of counting sheep.
Yeah. So, anyhow, yes, I know that neighborhood. Yeah. And Merriam Park, is that by the fairgrounds?
Merriam Park is actually, would be off of Marshall, just a block north of Marshall, in between Marshall and 94. And it would be in between, in that Crete and Vandalia area.
Oh, okay.
That neighborhood.
Okay, so
yeah.
My spot was in between.
Yeah,
you two.
You were a little bit east of where our apartment was there, but I put in gas a lot at Tracy Oil over the years, and now it's a big facility.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. It appeared to me that it might still be locally owned operation. Yeah. What a great corner.
I thought maybe you'd tell me that you worked in the radio station, which was right there, too.
No, over on Selby Avenue.
Yeah.
I could see the tower from my room, and I know some people that had worked there as a starter, but I was, when you grow up in St. Paul or Minneapolis or a larger community, you don't think you'll ever be on radio.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was cool, but I never thought about someday working in radio. I had a cousin that did, and I thought, oh, that's fun. But that's a whole different story. The show is about you, Brad Crabiel, CEO, president of Home Federal Savings and Loan with 16 locations.
Yeah, we actually have, Wayne, we have 14 locations. And 12 of them are branches where you can bring your deposits to, and two of them are just primarily lending, where we make loans
okay.
on.
Yeah. Were you around in the, and we'll get back to high school, but you graduated in 77, and shortly thereafter, federal banking institutions got into a whole bunch of trouble, and a lot of them shut their doors down, including 1 year in Northfield. And it revived itself as a bank, the building structure. Were you in the business at that horrible time?
Well, I was in college, and I went to Mankato State University.
Okay.
And I got tired of being broke after my sophomore year. And so I got a job in a tiny little bank in a town called Darfur, Minnesota, which has had about 170 people at the time. And I was a bookkeeper in that bank, and I worked there for about a year and a half, and then decided now I'm going to go back to college. I knew what I wanted to do. I was interested in finance and numbers, and so, but I continued to work in that bank. So during holidays and vacations, and subbed for people that were gone, And that was right at about the time when the savings and loans started getting in trouble. I think that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
Is they deregulated and allowed all banks to make all kinds of loans.
It happened
and,
in the broadcast industry.
Yep. And, of course, you know, a few people can ruin it for everybody, and that's kind of what happened there. And then interest rates, you remember, took off?
I was going to tell you that I had a demand note, The banker called me up. I won't even mention the name of the bank or anything, but and said, "Wayne, you got to come in and see me." And I said, "Oh, what about? You know, you want to buy some advertising?" And he said, "No, I got to talk to you about your loan."
Yeah.
And I go, "About my loan?" He said, "Yeah." I go, "Come on in. I'll explain it to you." So I went in there, and I said, "My loan's fine. I've been making all my payments."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, you know, that was a personal loan, Wayne. And we're going to switch that over to a commercial loan, okay? So you don't have to worry about your home, et cetera."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, there was a usury law at the time, 8%, 20%.
Okay. So that's why your loan got converted to a commercial loan.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. of course, I was somewhat naive until mm-hmm. I went, wait a minute, that payment that I was making, which was... it was a high number. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe today wouldn't, but to me it was a really high number.
Sure.
And now when I'm paying 20%, the amount that went in the principal was ludicrous.
Yeah.
And, of course, you having been raised on a farm and you're now working in a little town, I would assume that, in my opinion, the banks are saying, "Farmers, your land is worth a whole lot of money. Don't you want a new tractor? Come on in. We'll take care of you." And then, of course, it hit the fan, and a lot of you were right in that.
I was in that time. I was not a lender at the time. I was a bookkeeper in the bank, and this was a tiny bank, Wayne. And but I
what were the footings?
$7 million.
Yes, small. Yeah.
It's tiny, but I do remember. And everything was pen and ink. There was one computer in the bank, and it was a ledger card computer. Otherwise, we posted all the checks by hand. We sorted all the checks that came in that people wrote on their accounts, and we posted them. And we closed the bank at 3:00, you know, and locked it up. But we weren't done yet. Everybody thinks that we went home, but then we had to work
bankers
for another
hours.
Banker's hour. My recollection of that time and what was happening, I remember the president being all upset. He owned the bank. He was a great guy. He and his wife both worked in the bank. And that's when interest rates were taking off so fast. And we had CDs in the bank where client customers would have a 7% CD.
Yeah.
Well, they'd see other institutions. Now, interest rates were really increasing rapidly. And so they would come in and cash in their CD at 7%, pay the penalty, and go across the street, or not in that town because there was only one bank, but they might go to a neighboring town and reinvest it for 10% or 11%. And I remember the president at the time being very upset about it, and because he was worried about his bank, whether or not he'd be able to, you know, to keep it in place and replace that money, and saying, you know, what about that 7% home loan that I have? I'm not calling those people up now and telling them, you know what, I don't like that deal anymore. Now you can pay me 10% because it might be a 20-year note. Your situation was different. You know, you learned what a demand note was. And it's interesting, your story. I've heard them before that, people were moving around between products and that type of thing. So, again, really can be, there's some challenging times out there.
When a person has a CD, I want to get back to high school, but when a person buys a CD, and I'm just going to use easy numbers, okay? Mm-hmm. And let's say it pays 5%, and it's a five-year CD. And then at 5 years, they let you know that it's maturing, and then you have an option to go in and do what you want with it. And if you don't respond and react to it, they'll flip it for another.
Renew it.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah, flip is a bad word. They would renew it.
Yeah.
But maybe at the current rate, which would be like 1.5%, Can they do that, or does it, is it always the 5% you originally contracted with?
No, it will be for a renewal rate, because rates might have changed.
Fluctuate.
That's why it's important that you pay attention to those renewals, notices that come up, and because, you know, you should go into the bank and ask them about, well, what is the best thing, place for me to be? You know, what should I go for 18 months? Should I invest it for 24 months? Should I keep it short? What do you think? And it's important to pay attention to those renewal notices that come out.
Now, in your operation, I don't really want to go there. I want to do it chronologically, but I just get these questions. Does your institution with 14 locations also have a representative for stock market investment?
We do. We have Home Federal Investment Services, and we have four individuals in our bank that are licensed representatives that can offer those products and services to our clients, you bet.
And would it be reasonable for somebody to say, you know what, you have a CD that's maturing, and it's going to go down to 1.5%. Why don't you come on in? Let's look at maybe putting it in an investment in stock and bonds.
Sure. You know, what we do is with our clients, we answer any questions that they have. We'll if they ask for our opinion on what we think that they should do, we'll give it to them. We need to keep, you know, the two parts of the bank separate, because one side of the bank is insured and other side of the bank is not insured. However, we're all under the same roof.
Yeah.
And we try to work together as a team, take a team approach. And at Home Federal, Wayne, our goal is to really start people on one side of our balance sheet, and over time, we want to stay with them through their entire lifetime. So they might begin their relationship with us borrowing money for a car and opening a checking account or a savings account. But as their life progresses and they repay their debt, we'd like them to be investors with us. We'd like them to have savings and CDs and investments.
When you first started compared to today, the places where you could borrow money for a car or whatever has tripled.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to buy a car and the dealer's got a banking access right then and there, GMAC or Ford or anything like that. I'm getting way ahead of myself. I have to ask you before I forget, do you know a guy named Don Stoltz, Dan Stoltz?
That name is familiar.
Well, he's in the same position as you with Spire.
Okay, credit union. Okay,
yeah.
Yep.
Heck of a nice guy.
He's a guy that drives a blue Ford pickup.
Yeah, yeah, right. You got it. Well, he's a good friend.
Okay.
And I asked him when I booked you to be on the show, I texted him, asked him if he knew you, and he doesn't know you. And
He's up in the Twin Cities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I thought, like broadcasters, when we had our conventions, we would have people from all over the state, and so you got to know each other.
Sure.
Because
it's
you're in the same
business. Little different in the banking business. Yeah. I mean, there's 300 banks in Minnesota.
When I was president, there were 300 broadcasters in Minnesota.
How many now?
As far as radio stations go, they may be the same or more, but as far as ownership goes, it's half.
Yeah.
At least.
It's a lot the same way in banking, and we're a savings bank. We're a community bank, whereas Mr. Stoltz is with a credit union.
Yeah.
And so the credit unions kind of have their own affiliations, and the banks have their own. So it's kind of like AM and FM.
Oh, I just thought, yeah, okay. Speaking about that, I got to take a break on the AM and FM here in Northfield, Minnesota, KYMN. My guest this morning is a guy named Brad Krabiel, and he's a banker. We'll be back in a flash.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
The Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce Home and Garden Show is coming up Saturday, April 7th at the Northfield Arena. Over 50 vendors will be there to show their products and services. You'll find everything for the home and garden, as well as lifestyle, health, and leisure. The doors open at 9 o'clock and the show goes till 3 in the heated confines of the Northfield Arena at 1280 Bohlenbacher Drive. It's the 2018 Northfield Area Home and Garden Show, brought to you by the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce and sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. Saturday, April 7th.
A home is probably the biggest purchase you'll ever make, and you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. Call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell. I not only offer homeowners insurance to protect your investment, but I can help with home loans too. No wonder more homeowners trust State Farm than any other insurance company. For information, call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545. Providing insurance and financial services, loans are offered through State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is.
The number six song in all of 1977, the year my guest graduated from Mountain Lake High School.
Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
Sir Duke.
You got it.
Is it?
Yep. You did. WCCO didn't play this when you were in high school.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
Did you know that Charlie Boone and... Roger Erickson.
Roger Erickson.
Charlie Boone was my first guest on this show.
Really?
And then later on, I had Roger down.
Charlie Boone, I was always a big fan of his, yeah. Wayne. I used to listen to, he had a show like late morning or early afternoon, mm-hmm. Boone in the Afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's way before.
Yeah. And he had the most, he had a show much like yours. He would have people on and entertainers and guests, that type of thing, and just have a great conversation with him, played some music,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Oh, yeah.
Howard Viking the same way.
Boy, you're going way back. You're going back into the
60s. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A great station. Corporate bought it.
Yeah.
Not the great station.
Not that it was. Nope.
Not that
nope.
it was.
No.
Okay. I'm not dissing them now. Some of the people on the air, there are friends of mine.
Some good people on there yet, but it's definitely a different format than what I remember. And it was really a great station.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You betcha. 5 minutes before 10 o'clock. Tell me about your high school career. Were you involved in athletics? Were you involved in debate? Were you involved in theater? Were you involved in... As a farm kid, usually you can't do some things because you have to get home and help Dad.
Yeah, Wayne, I was the only son. And I have a recollection of in about seventh grade, I came home from school and we were all sitting around the supper table. It was in the fall. And we went around the table, and my mom and dad asked, well, how was school today? What did you do? And I piped up that, I checked out my football equipment.
Ooh.
And it was dead silence around the table, and my dad asked me, you did what? And I said, I checked out my football equipment. And he said, have you looked outside the window? You know, and he pointed out to the corn dryer that was out there and the combine was out there, and he said, you're going to have to take that stuff back because I can't do this by myself here. I need you.
Seventh grade.
Seventh grade. And he said, besides that, you weigh all of about 78 pounds.
I was going to say,
yeah,
you probably.
I was always one of the smallest in my class. He said, you can wrestle if you want to. That's when harvest is done. If you want to go out for that sport, but spring and fall sports, it's not going to work here because I need you here. So I took all my equipment back, which was kind of humbling the next day, but I survived, and so I wrestled a little bit, not a lot. I was not a real big sports guy. I was, again, really small. I wrestled 98 when I was in 7th and 8th grade, and I struggled to get to that weight, not to cut down to it, you know. And so I was more interested in growing up. Yeah, I was a little interested in girls, and I was really interested in anything that had a spark plug or had a crankshaft. I was a real gearhead as a little kid, and so I was always interested in that kind of stuff. I was always wrenching. That was my thing.
When you were wrestling at 98 pounds, I asked this question of everybody, no matter what you did, you always remember one thing that happened. in football or basketball, whatever you played. Now, you're a 98-pound wrestler.
Yeah.
You probably weren't the starter or whatever they call it, but you did have matches.
Sure.
Which one do you remember the most, a match?
I remember my first match as on varsity. I was scared to death because I think I was eighth grade, maybe seventh. We were a small school, and I remember I think I set the world's record for getting pinned. How fast I got pinned because it was over before I even knew it. But then I also remember getting a pin once, and I think that was in I was wrestling a little bit. Up then maybe 112 or something like that, but I remember I was wrestling the B team, and I think I got the quickest pin of the team that year or whatever. So yeah, kind of went from the penthouse to the outhouse, you know.
Yeah, but
the way around.
Isn't it fun to remember?
Sure,
you know, and
yeah.
And it goes through your mind, everyone. You know, how'd that guy pin me that quick? You know,
yeah.
I think I should have done. How long did you wrestle?
I only wrestled about 3 years.
Okay,
and then I was done. Yep.
So how about were you like the school president of your class?
No, not really. I was kind of in the shadows, in the background.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have buddies that you hung with all the time,
yeah.
or did that farming take everything?
No,
away?
we had a select small group of guys that we ran around with. I liked music, so I was in choir and I did a little bit of drama. I was in some of the plays in school, that type of thing.
Oh, you remember the plays of it?
Oh yeah.
What were they?
Oh, we had Annie Get Your Gun was one of them.
I came close. I was an Annie.
Yeah. We never had Annie, but we had
Maybe.
Fiddler on the Roof. That was another one we had.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I enjoyed music. I played violin as a little kid. My mom and dad thought we were really into the arts, and so they from the time I was. 5 years old, I took violin lessons, the Suzuki method, you know, where you learn to play by ear first. And you got to a certain age in junior high when playing violin wasn't cool with the girls. You
I
know?
Was just going to say,
so,
you know, did you fiddle around then with the girls? No, a little joke, you know. Well, that brings us to the time we have to take a break for news, all right? My guest this morning is Brad Crabiel, and he is from Lake City, and he is CEO and president of a Federal Savings and Loan Institution that has 14 locations, and we are going to talk about his bit in college and things like that after the news next on the 195.1 FM, KYMN, 1080 AM from Northfield, Minnesota.
Targeted deliveries Trump shunned. I'm John Trout. Federal authorities are investigating suspicious packages sent to military installations near the nation's capital. Correspondent Barbara Starr.
The FBI concerned and looking for whoever may have sent these across Washington, D.C.
One package did contain explosive material. No one was hurt. Two more lawyers have declined to join President Trump's legal team to represent him in Special Counsel Mueller's Russia investigation.
Dan Webb and Tom Buchanan released a statement confirming that President Trump reached out asking them to represent them, but they're citing some conflicts as the reason why they can't join on.
Correspondent Abby Phillip. President Trump, through a spokesman, continues to deny having an affair with Stormy Daniels and is disputing her claim she was threatened to keep quiet.
David Schwartz, attorney for President Trump's private attorney, Michael Cohen, is hitting back at Stormy Daniels' 60 Minutes claim.
It's a figment of her imagination.
Daniels' own attorney, Michael Avenatti, claims he is getting tips about who delivered the threat in 2011 in a Las Vegas parking lot.
If necessary, if it leads to Mr. Cohen or Mr. Trump, we're going to call him out on it.
Bob Costantini, Washington.
New numbers just out show it's a seller's market in the housing sector of the economy.
Standard & Poor's says its S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Index climbed 6.2% in January from a year earlier. That nearly matches December's 6.3% gain, which had been the fastest 12-month growth seen in 3 years. The reason? Homes for sale are scarce, and the price of houses is easily outpacing wage growth and inflation. Some of the highest annual gains in home prices were in Seattle, where prices rose 12.9%, in Las Vegas, where they jumped just over 11%, and 10.2% in San Francisco. Scott Carr, Washington.
Retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens is calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment to allow for significant gun control legislation. I'm John Trout.
but losing my head many years from now. Will he still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hello, welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. Out of Northfield, Minnesota, we have an interesting guest in studio. His name is Brad Krabiel, and he is from Lake City, and he is my guest today. We talked about your high school career, the violin thing. Can you still, does that make you appreciate, now you're connected with your connected with the Rochester Symphony, Orchestra. Does that experience you had on the violin make you more appreciative of the string section
in
the orchestra?
Oh, yeah. It really does. If it's a very, very difficult instrument to play well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can... I always used to kid that, you know, if I got my violin out, there wouldn't be a cat or a dog in the neighborhood anymore because it's not very pleasing to the ears. But to hear those folks in that orchestra, the professionals, play... And to know how hard it is to do that, it really does make me appreciate it.
I love the string section.
Yeah.
If I were a rich man, you were in that play?
Mm-hmm.
What role did you play in that, do you recall?
I played Perchik the student.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the guys that took one of Tevye's daughters. Yep.
Oh, now, and the other play was Annie Get Your Gun?
Yep.
Did you use a live horse?
No.
Okay. What role did you have in that one?
I think I played a salesman or a carnival barker or something like Charlie Davenport or something like that.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, for 50 cents. Watch the elephant climb the fence.
Yeah.
And so that's a memory, too.
Sure.
You know, that.
You know, and growing up in a small community where you have an opportunity to actually participate.
Did you carry that on any further than high school?
No. Okay. Just was in a couple of them, and I'm not in college or anything. But I enjoyed it while I had the opportunity to participate.
Now, Christine, 5 years older than you, she went on to college?
Yeah, she went to Mankato State.
And both your mom and dad had your mom had a college education.
Right.
Your dad went into farming.
Yeah, my dad lasted by his own admission one semester, and he realized that school was not for him. But he was really a self-taught guy, Wayne. He read a lot. He was very interested in the arts. He listened to the radio a lot because we were in the equipment or in the truck all the time, and he listened to interview type shows like this or a public radio, that type of thing. He was really pretty well schooled for not going to college.
Is your dad still living?
No, he passed away 3 years ago, almost to the day now. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And how about mom?
Mom died in 2002.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how after a parent dies, that before they pass away, if they weren't in, you know, a lengthy illness, you'd kept in contact and everything's fine. But once the funeral's over, the next day and the next day and the next day, you think of them every day.
Oh, yeah.
It's just weird. You kind of say, oh, I wish Mom were here to...
Yeah, yeah. You ask yourself, hey, you think you have to ask Mom this question. Dad would know. I got to call him.
Yeah.
And then you realize he's not there.
Or share a success story.
Sure.
Or get some support.
Get some advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sorry to hear they both passed away. Mine both have, too.
Yeah. They say you never really grow up until you lose both parents, and I really believe that.
Okay.
You know, that really kind of...
Yeah, you're the leader of the pack at that point.
Yeah.
I get it. At 6 minutes after 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, so after you got out of Mountain Lake, who gave your commencement speech?
You know, I don't remember.
I didn't think you did. Nobody does, except one attorney. He's a district attorney now for Rice County, John Fossum. He remembered his high school commencement speaker, his college commencement speaker, and when he got on passed the bar and they graduated as a lawyer, he remembers that speaker.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
It was Walter Mondale.
Oh, yeah.
And all three of them. Northfield, St. Olaf,
sure.
and that law school, Mitchell.
Mitchell.
I think. So you go out into the world to Mankato, right out of high school. You mm-hmm. go to Mankato. Now, that can be kind of a cultural shock compared to the little town that you grew up in.
Yeah.
You're going there, and you're seeing different cultured people and party people. And I didn't know this was that easy to do that and this, and mm-hmm. I might forget to do this and that. How long did you stay in the first time?
My freshman year in college, I actually went to a church school down in Newton, Kansas, and I found out that wasn't the right thing for me.
Was it ministry type?
No, it was just a church-based school, kind of like a St. Olaf, but okay. just a tiny school down there. But so I came back and my second year, then I transferred to Mankato, and I really liked Mankato a lot because I was already interested in business, and they had a great business program there. And some really, really good teachers, some good professors that really got me interested in banking and got me interested in finance. So
so you were majoring in just a liberal arts college
yeah,
degree?
Yep. Okay. The first couple of years there, you can have a lot of fun, and it's a great place to go to school. But I really credit one of the professors there getting a hold of me in about my junior year and asked me how many credits I was taking and what my course load was. And he said, "Do you ever want to get out of here?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, and he sat me down and he planned out my next 2 years of school and got me out of there. And
how did he know you were flailing?
F-L-A. Well, no, it wasn't grades or anything like that. I think I more reached out to him because I wanted some kind of a plan.
Okay.
And I didn't have an advisor. And and so I just went to him, and he helped me. And, boy, he's...
I didn't say failing. I said flailing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, where do I go?
Well,
what should I do?
It's that age, where you really don't know what you want to do for sure. And I knew I wanted to graduate from college. I was interested in, I liked accounting and I liked finance and business law, that type of thing. So it's pretty easy for me once I got on that track.
So you graduated in 77. So in 1968, you were just a young, what year were you born?
59.
Yeah, okay. So you were 9 years old. Yeah. Do you remember the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy that year?
You bet. Again, we had one TV station, but we had the radio, and I remember all of those events, very, very vividly. And I was glued to the CBS Evening News every night as a little kid.
I'd Walter.
Be home, Walter Cronkite.
Yep. Yeah. And so did your parents share their experience with John Kennedy, 63, getting assassinated?
Yeah, in fact, on that day when John Kennedy was assassinated, I was with my dad that would have been in 1963.
Three.
Right,
yeah.
So I'd been 4 years old, but I was with my dad in Mankato at Lewis Westgate, which was a drugstore on the west end of the town, kind mm-hmm. of a supermarket drugstore. And I clearly remember a guy in a beige trench coat, a raincoat, coming up to my dad and saying, "Did you hear the president was shot?" And my dad was really upset about that. And I remember we just went back out to the car, and my mom and my sisters were there, and we went home.
Yep.
We went home.
And of course, being much older than you, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
When you were a kid in high school, did you get a car?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Again,
Did you buy it?
I bought it. My first car, I was a VW guy through and through. And so my first car was a 1961 VW Bug or a Beetle. And I bought it for $65 from a single lady in town that couldn't make it run. And she was sick and tired of it. And she had gotten a job and she didn't want that car anymore. So I went into town with a pickup with my dad and a chain, and we pulled it home and basically had it running in a couple hours. And so that was my car, and it was wasn't much to look at, but boy, I was really proud of that car.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So what was wrong with it?
Fuel line was broke on it, and so if you pulled it fast enough, you could you could overcome the little leak in the fuel line and it would get gas, but if you just simply tried to start it with the 6-volt starter that turned real slow, it couldn't suck the fuel in. So it was fixed it in just about an hour.
How long did you keep that?
Oh, about 2 years. Two years.
And a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Good gas mileage.
Oh, yeah, good. Very slow. So
what's the most amount of people you had in there?
Maybe 6.
You tried it.
We tried it, yeah.
That was fun. Did they have keggers back in Mountain Lake?
Oh, I suppose they had a few, yeah.
I know you didn't go to them.
No, never. Never.
But,
never.
You know,
I don't know if they had so much keggers, but they had parties, you know.
Yeah.
Keggers really were more for the college kids, you know. So, there were a few parties out there, but it was a pretty good community overall.
Yeah. Did you know any of the leaders of your community as a kid there? You were on the farm, but
sure.
Like the county commissioners or anything?
Well, we knew the city leaders and the people in town, the newspaper guys, that type of thing. And everybody, good thing about growing up in a small town like that, Wayne, was that you had a lot of parents in town.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Everybody was watching out, and that was one of the compelling reasons why Beth and I decided to move from St. Paul when our boys were little and to get them out into a smaller community, because she grew up in a small community too, and we knew that we wanted to raise them in a small community where they had an opportunity to be involved in things and actually compete, you know, in like basketball and football and that type of thing, and in a local church that we could join.
Well, some kids that have high-profile parents resent it, you know, because everybody knows them through their parents,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's a police chief or a radio announcer or newspaper or whatever,
mm-hmm.
a professor at the colleges, and, you know, they can't do anything, and it gets back to mom and dad.
Yeah.
and they kind of resent that.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they grow out of it, of course. It's 15 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Brad Krabiel. And where's that name come from?
It's Swiss German. It means Crow Hill, if you translate it.
Okay. You got it. Did you do any research on your ancestry?
Yeah, you know, we've done quite a bit and traced it all the way back to the 1600s, back
wow.
in Switzerland and Germany and Russia and
Austria,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. You ever been there?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've been there three, four times.
Did you ever find a relative in a home village or anything?
I didn't, but my father did. He actually found somebody that still had the Krabiel farm. That would have been in Germany that he found that in.
No, you said Krabiel.
Yeah, Krabiel.
Which one do you use?
Krabiel is probably the correct pronunciation. Most people say it more with a short E.
Oh, you mean the people that, let's say, work when you go visit one of your branches, and they say, well, Mr. Krabiel is here, or
yeah.
Mr. Krabiel?
Both. Either one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. So Krabiel, that's cool.
That's fine. Yeah.
So you got a direction from one of the professors at Mankato State,
mm-hmm.
and you were interested in banking, mm-hmm. in business. And so you graduated from there. Are you one of those guys that did it in 4 years, or did it take you 5 or 6?
You know, it took me about 4.5.
Okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah, because I remember going to summer school, Wayne, and I was living in an apartment up on the hilltop there, and I graduated, loaded all my stuff from my apartment in the back of my dad's old Ford or Chevy pickup, and this would have been in July or August. And I remember driving west out of town, you know, back down the hill in Mankato, and I was behind a big truck, and it was like a National Guard truck. And I thought, geez, of all the times I have to get behind a slow-moving vehicle.
A convoy.
I need to get out of town here. Well, as I went down the hill, I started noticing that there was barricades on either side of the cross streets, and I noticed some people were still sitting in lawn chairs along the street that I was driving down, and it was blocked on either side.
It was a parade or
I was the last unit in the parade. And here I had my bed and my dresser and all that type of thing in the back of this pickup, and these guys were yelling at me, "Hey, nice refrigerator, you know." Yeah.
That's
nice float. Yeah. So it was a very, very fitting end to my college education. I still laugh at that. What are the odds of that? Yeah. And I had nowhere to go but follow the parade all the way through town.
You had an armed guard.
Yeah, I did.
That's pretty cool. 1018 on 1080 Radio, Brad Crable is my guest on Kim. So right out of college, did you go to work for that small bank that you were a part-timer with?
You know, I didn't. I went to work for an implement dealership back in my hometown of Mountain Lake, Midway Farm Equipment, and that had changed ownership, and they needed a bookkeeper. And so they knew me. My dad had done business there, bought tractors and parts and that type of thing.
What
and
kind?
The best. Alice Chalmers.
Okay.
And so I worked there about a year and a half, and then I knew I wanted to go back and move to the Twin Cities. And so that's when I moved. It would have been about 1983. I moved to Minneapolis, okay. St. Paul area, and got a job in a bank there, and the rest is history.
Well, when you were working as a bookkeeper at an implement dealership, the dollar amount for the equipment, tractors,
sure,
and combines and plows and discs and all that, the numbers would be big, but then you have the parts department.
Yeah.
Am I correct in assuming that if you separate the two, which you probably did, the bottom line profit was better in the parts department than it would have been in the implement department? Would I be right or wrong?
Yeah, you know, you're right, Wayne. As I recall, we had three different departments. We had parts, we had service, and then we had new and used sales. And so, yeah, the parts and the service department really helped carry the dealership, you know, because farmers, you know, as commodity prices go up and down, they make buying decisions, and sometimes they might hold off a few years. Well, then you make it up maybe in service or in parts because they're repairing their equipment more.
And if you went in there in 81 right after graduation,
that was a tough time.
I was going to say, that's when the bankers were saying buy. That had to be a good time for the implement dealers because the farmers were being told to get new equipment because their land was so good.
It would have been in 1982, Wayne.
Yeah.
That was the egg economy was not doing the best, and it was one of the reasons why I didn't go back and farm, because it was just a very tough economic time. And so used implements were selling pretty good at that time. I remember we used to do a lot of business out past Mountain Lake and out past Cottonwood County, and I was a bookkeeper and I was the truck driver, so I would haul the equipment too. So I'd come as far out here as Northfield, and I remember some trips I'd haul combines, you know, a new one out and a used one back, or I'd go out to South Dakota with a semi and haul equipment. Some great fun times.
No, sure, a lot of what. When you compare today's combine to the ones that you were selling at Mountain Lake, the price.
Yeah, the price of a combine back then, Wayne, was maybe $70,000, and a 150-horse tractor might be $60,000, $50,000, and now it's just through the roof compared to that.
Have you been in a new one recently in the last year or two?
No.
Climbed into one of those combines or tractors?
No, but I guess they're just like a spaceship.
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of farmers listen to KYMN radio in their air-conditioned cab as a GPS, the program the tractor, and can sit back and relax.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all the time, but it's just amazing that they can make those things, and they cost a fortune.
Yeah, yeah.
Last one that I ever got into, and this is a while back, was like $250,000.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing.
They cover a lot of acres with them.
So help me again in regards to getting out of the implement business with the very best, Alice Chalmers.
Of course.
Or John Deere.
Yeah.
And I have a lawnmower that I bought from a John Deere, the John Deere dealership. My friend owned it at the time. It's now a real nice operation in southern Minnesota. And I paid a lot of money for a walk-behind, self-propelled lawnmower. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of money for a lawnmower. And today, I can go in the garage and start it.
Still works.
Oh,
still,
yeah.
Yeah.
You get a service once every couple of years.
You bought quality.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's 27 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you get what you buy.
Yep.
Or
you pay for.
Yeah, that's the old model. We're going to take a break and come back. We're talking to a gentleman by the name of Brad Krabiel. And interesting thing, we got him getting into banking. We'll be right back.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
It's music time on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest is a graduate of Mountain Lake High School in 1977. Name this tune.
How deep is your love?
That's correct.
And either, is it the Bee Gees or Andy Gibb or...
Well... The Bee Gees. You got it. I like their music.
Mm-hmm.
25 minutes after 10 o'clock on Kim Radio. Brad, you are now out of the implement dealership and into a bank.
Yep.
Okay. In what town?
It would have been in Northeast Minneapolis.
Northeast Minneapolis?
Yep. Fidelity Bank in Northeast Minneapolis is where I got my first job when I moved to the Twin Cities.
What type of a neighborhood is that?
Polish. Polish, okay. Yep.
Is that where Nye's?
Very close to Nye's. It's okay. 24th and Central Avenue. So okay. Just across the Central Avenue Bridge. And great community. It was a family-owned bank owned by the Cornell family at the time.
How'd they find you?
I found them. Okay. I found them. When I moved to the Twin Cities, loaded up all my stuff, and I stopped in the local bank that I'd worked at in Darfur. And the cashier said, well, Brad, do you have a job yet? And I said, nope. And he handed me a trade publication called Commercial West and say, there's always jobs in here, Brad. Why don't you take this along just in case? And by golly, that job was in there. And so that was the first place I called, and I got a job right away.
And they probably hired you because you had experience in small town banking.
Yep.
And locally owned banking.
That's right. They told me later on that's what got me the job, because otherwise I didn't have the kind of experience that they would have been looking for.
And what was your role when you first worked at that bank? And what were their footings?
I want to say, Wayne, they were a family of about seven or eight banks. They owned banks in New Prague and Gaylord, in Minneapolis and Edina. And I want to say they were maybe about a $300-400 million bank at
okay.
the time. So good sized bank, and the one I worked for on Central Avenue was the main bank. That was the main bank.
And what was your role?
You know, they hired me as a commercial loan trainee, and they sent me to their brand new branch that was just opening in the Burnsville Triangle in between 35E and 35, just north of you up here. So right off of Crystal Lake and County Road 42, and in that little development in there. It was brand new. Cobblestone was the area at the time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I know
just
where you're
south of there. Yeah.
What was the name of it?
It was called Fidelity Bank, and we were the Burnsville branch, and that would have been in 1983. And it was a great, great opportunity because I had a great boss there, and I had a great staff to work with, and just getting started. And I stayed there about a year, and then they moved me up to Minneapolis to run their credit department for them.
So what was that like, mingling with big city suburban city business owners? Was it mostly corporate transfer of funds?
Yeah, it was. They were businesses. A lot of home building, of course, going on in Burnsville at the time. Yep. So we had a lot of builders, a lot of developers. Had some neat businesses that were that borrowed money from the bank. And it was just very exciting for me again because, again, being a kid from southwestern Minnesota, the only connection I had to the Twin Cities was through the media. And I heard all these advertisers and these businesses, and I'd listen to the business news, and now all of a sudden I was up in the middle of it, and that was very exciting for me. Driving up and down 35W at the time, or 35 at the time, to get to my little apartment up in St. Paul, driving against the traffic. And I knew I never wanted to sit in traffic like that when I grew up. Yeah. You know, I was always driving against the traffic. But it was very, it was really a great experience. It was a really a good bank to work for, family owned again.
What was the biggest loan you ever made?
At that bank, maybe a couple $100,000. I don't remember what it was, or it might have been a trucking company or something like that.
And you had somebody had to sign off on
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They wouldn't have trusted me.
So were you kind of excited about the big numbers, comparatively speaking?
Yeah, it was interesting to see. I was fascinated by that.
Were you married to Beth at that time?
You know, not yet. I was up there a year, and I had met this beautiful lady who was an RN at Methodist Hospital in Rochester. And so she was in Rochester, and I was in St. Paul, and we would get together on weekends or whenever we could get together, and became clear very, very quickly that this commuting thing was not going to work. And so we were married shortly thereafter.
Well, her job as an RN...
Yeah.
You had no problems of her getting a job.
Oh, no. I thought that was, you know, like I said, a lot of people accused me of marrying up. I always did that. She always made more money than I did, she's just a wonderful person. And she was a pastor's daughter from Canby, Minnesota, Lutheran pastor's daughter, came from a great family, great mom and dad. And, we've been together now 34 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What do they refer them, young ladies who are daughters of a minister? The MDs or PKs?
PKs.
Preacher's kid.
Preacher's kid, yeah.
When I was single over in Wisconsin, I was dating a preacher's kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, you feel like, ooh, you know, better be cool here.
Oh, yeah.
So that experience in Burnsville was a pleasant experience.
Sure.
They guided you, helped you, taught you.
Yep.
And then you got transferred to
Minneapolis. Yep.
And that's the home office of eight locations. And did you know that I was in the business at one time in my career?
No.
I'm going to tell you. Do you know where Payne Avenue is?
Sure. I worked in a bank on Payne Avenue. Okay. We're very close to it.
All right.
Payne and Arcade.
Okay. Mine was a little bit further towards Lake Valen.
Okay.
And but it was on Arcade. Mm-hmm. No, it was on Payne. On Payne.
Yeah.
Okay. It was called Payne Finance.
Okay. Really?
Now, back in those days, this would have been in the 61 era, 1961, 62, maybe, 60, they had what they called small loan financing, up to $600.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had industrial financing, which could go up to several thousand dollars. And they had the usury law. And I got hired. Some guy recommended me, and then the boss called me and asked me to come in, and I interviewed for a job as a loan counselor. Okay?
Okay.
And they had over $1 million in the 60s.
Wow.
$600 cap.
Wow, that's a lot of loans.
Yeah. So guess what I even remember his name. His last name was Boyd, Mr. Boyd, and he was a former Marine or something,
uh-huh.
Kind of short but bulky and demanding. And you know what my job was as a finance counselor? Here's a deck of index cards. Go call on every one of them and collect the money.
Past dues.
Yep. Yeah. That was my job, was to do collections.
Yeah.
And that took me into neighborhoods I normally wouldn't have gone into.
Right.
And I had a lot of experience of trying to collect.
And that was like financing like TVs and consumer goods, that type
mostly,
of thing.
It was mostly furniture, autos.
Auto, okay.
As a matter of fact, a famous Minnesota twin of that era came in to borrow $600, and the boss said, when he comes in, just fill the paperwork and pass him. You know, don't check on anything, just give him the money. And I thought, why would the guy in this sport be looking for a little $600 loan, which today that'd be like $5,000,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
And what he had done, he had bought a pretty nice car, and he got the industrial loan for the car if he had $600 down.
Oh.
That wouldn't fly in your bank,
no,
would it?
No.
So that's my experience was collections.
Sure.
Collections.
How long did you stay there?
Not long. Yeah. Probably a year, maybe.
Yeah.
I did
good experience. Good experience, but it's very demanding.
I met some of the most wonderful people.
Yeah.
I mean, I met people I wanted to make the payment for myself.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking, you know, get at least $10 out of them.
Sure. Yeah.
And you hear their story, and you look where they're living, and you think, gee, you know. And I got other weird stories, but I can't share those on the air. 10:33 on 1080 Radio. Okay, let's get out of your office, your main office for the company you were working with in 81 on Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Fidelity, right?
Yeah, it was Fidelity that was in Minneapolis, and then I left there and went to work for a large bank group out of St. Paul called Bremer Financial.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
They're the ones that are handling Prince's estate.
Yeah.
They're over on University Avenue, if I recall.
Yeah, they're all over the Twin Cities, much bigger now than what they used to be.
Well, the one I remember
was on University.
Yeah. By the way, I was at the prosthetists on 4th and 4th, and I'm looking at the brass listing of businesses, Rochester Symphony Orchestra. And I thought, 4th floor. I think I'll go up and say hello to Jerry.
Yeah, not there anymore.
Yeah. So, and Lim Lab doesn't have their name on there.
They don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
Boy, how I diverse things. Where were we? We were with Bremer.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And I left Bremer about 3-4 years later, and actually
Can you tell me what was the highest role you played at Fidelity?
You know, I think I left Fidelity Bank as a commercial lender, so
okay.
I was making loans there, and then I went to work for Bremer in St. Paul, and there I worked for the company that owned the banks. I worked for the holding company, the bank holding company, and there I worked analyzing really large loans that the banks, our banks, would originate, and then they'd be too big for an individual bank to hold, and so they would sell pieces of that loan to the other banks, and I was in charge of making sure those loans were good and following up on them, that type of thing. So
Bundle like we went through in 2008.
No. Homes. These were commercial loans.
Yeah.
Commercial loans.
Yeah. Where was that headquarters?
In St. Paul.
Where in St. Paul?
Right downtown. It would have been in 55 East 5th Street, downtown St. Paul, in the Norwest building, the Brown building in downtown St.
Okay,
Paul.
I know where that is.
Yep. By Ecolab, not far from the old Ecolab building.
I used to hang around on 7th and Wabasha as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking 15, 16. When they had streetcars, it was so cool.
Neat town.
So how high did you rise in Bremer?
You know, I think I left there as a vice president or something, or assistant vice president, and then decided that I wanted to do something a little bit different, and I followed a couple guys that bought a bank in the far northwest corner of Minnesota, way up by Thief River Falls. And they bought the bank and needed to change the leadership in the bank, and they said, well, you've worked in a small bank before, Brad, why don't you come along with us, and why don't you get that bank going. It was a bank that had been in trouble, and so I lived in St. Paul at the time. We had no children, and I have a very understanding wife, and she said, you've always wanted to be a bank president, go ahead and do it. And so I would commute up there on Monday mornings, and I would come home on Friday evenings, and it was 318 miles one way from St. Paul. And I did that for a year, hired the staff up there, got the bank turned around, and then decided it was time to pull the car off the road, you know, because it was really grueling work.
Yeah.
And I got an opportunity to join a bank in the east side of St. Paul, right on 94 and Ruth Street.
Okay, yeah, out by 3M.
Yeah, it was called Battle Creek Bank.
Oh, Battle Creek. I went off the ski on a toboggan when I was a kid.
Yep.
Never did it again.
And so I worked there for a number of years again in the commercial loan area. And we sold that bank then to another bank group, to a larger bank group. And that's when I decided I was going to get out of banking. And I did some consulting work. Bought a business, owned a little business for a while, enjoyed
What kind?
Cabinets.
Oh, your dad was a, or
my
grandpa was
yep,
a cabinet
yep,
maker. Yep.
Yeah. So we
that's a, that
tough,
could be tough,
tough
yeah.
business, but we did okay at it. And I kept that for a couple of years and, did consulting work to banks. I would go out and, work with banks that had problems or that were buying and selling each other. And so I would work on those kinds of transactions. And in the meantime, we had two children. And my wife had stayed home when they were little guys, and she had just finished her master's, and so she said, you know, I'd really like to get a good job, and I said, you know what, we got the two kids, I'm kind of at a waypoint in my career here. Why don't you go off and grab the big job, and I'll stay home with the boys.
Oh.
And so, but I said, I don't want to do it in the Twin Cities. I want to go back out to a small community. So we bought a small farm place south of Lake City. That would have been in 1993. And she got a job with the hospital in Red Wing at the time, running their home care. And I stayed home with the boys for 5 years then, when they were, until Andrew was 5 years old and went to first grade. And in the meantime, I had very understanding parents. They would, grandparents, you know, of my kids, they would take care of the kids. If I'd go out on the road and I'd have to spend some time, you know, with banks, I still kept my hand in it but stayed home with them for 5 years until they were in school. And then my last client as a consultant, was Home Federal Bank in Rochester. And, I got along really good with the president there. I did some work for him, and He kept after me to hire me. He wanted to hire me, and I said, you know, I'm out of banking. I'm done working in a bank. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. But he was a very persistent guy, a great, great man, and finally talked me into coming to work for him full time.
And you took his job.
Yeah, and he's since left, and I've been the president now for 10 years. Yeah, nine years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What a fortunate man you are.
I'm very fortunate to have. I had the opportunity to work, Wayne, with some very, very smart people, some really gifted people, and I've been surrounded by and blessed by just a fantastic family. That's huge. I can't tell you what a big contribution that's been for me.
When Ruth got her, Beth yep. got her, Ruth Street,
yeah.
okay. when Beth got her master's and she went to work in Red Wing, was she administrative or she
started,
hands-on?
She was started in home care there, ran their home care division, and she made her way all the way up to chief operating officer at that hospital. And that's at the time, then they merged the hospital in with the, it was a fair, with Fairview, hospitals. And, she spent the next 8 years then, until 2 years ago, she was president of Fairview Ridges Hospital in Burnsville.
Oh.
Commuting from Lake City to Burnsville every day for
God.
8 years. And, she left there about 2 years ago. And, you know, after they finished their new surgery center that they built up there, she was in charge of that project. And, she took a little time off, and now she is the president and CEO of Zumbro Valley Healthcare Center. It's a mental health facility down in Rochester. And, so she took that job about a year ago now, and, or maybe not quite a year, but, she's starting over again in another career there.
So, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a great lady.
Is that facility for drug abuse or just,
yeah,
not just, but
yeah, it's for
people
born
with low IQs?
Yeah, well, it's more for psychiatric healthcare issues, chemical dependency, certainly. You know, in a number of different things in the surrounding area. So they partner with the various counties and municipalities and that type of thing and provide services for folks in need.
And where's it, the location again?
In Rochester. It would be on the south end of Rochester.
How much of a commute is that from Lake City?
About 35 miles. 35 miles. And I do the same thing. So it's a walk in the park for us, you know, compared to what we've been used to over the years.
It's a bank way.
And no traffic. No traffic, Wayne, you know. So, yeah.
I'm going to take a break, and when I get back, I want to know what it's like to be a house father.
Okay.
And then what your involvement is in your own community in Lake City,
sure,
which has a wonderful festival in the summertime.
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. You know what we are? We are KYMN 95.1 FM, The One, and, of course, 1080 AM, and streaming at kymnradio.net.
When it's time for preventative maintenance on your new car or truck, you don't just take your car into anyone. At Witt Brothers Service in Northfield, you know you found a name you can trust. To start, we're a Napa Auto Care Center, so the technicians we employ are experts trained in every aspect of your vehicle's maintenance. This gives you the peace of mind in knowing that everything we do is accepted under the terms of your manufacturer's warranty. Add to that the fact that we use quality Napa parts that meet or exceed original equipment and specifications. And you have the one place where you can entrust all of your vehicles. Come see Witt Brothers Service in downtown Northfield today.
It takes 500 truckloads of dirt to create a track for Monster Energy Supercross. It takes strength, horsepower, and endurance to conquer it. Watch the world's greatest dirt bike riders race toward ultimate victory. Monster Energy AMA Supercross and FIM World Championship. Get a promo code to save $10 on tickets from a participating Holiday Station store when you buy Monster Energy drinks at 2 for $4. Restrictions and exclusions may apply. See receipt for details. U.S. Bank Stadium, April 14th.
Heritage Dental Care in Northfield is a general dental clinic specializing in a variety of dental procedures and services. Make an appointment today with Doctors David Brust, David Buck, Bo Stanley, or Michael Thompson. New patients and emergencies welcome 5 days a week at Heritage Dental Care.
The number one song on the pop charts.
So many nights I'd sit by.
Pat Boone's daughter?
Yes.
I can't remember her name, though.
Debbie.
Debbie Boone. Debbie Boone. And You Light Up My Life.
You got it. You did 100%.
I missed...
Mako.
Mako.
Yeah, yes. Star Wars. Yeah. Well, that doesn't count. A one-hit wonder, I think. Yeah. I just like that part where she sings that, those words. All right, here we are broadcasting from the studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota on a Tuesday morning, the 27th of March. The year is 2018. Brad Krabiel is my guest here on KYM. And you mentioned for 5 years while your boys were growing up, and that would be Ben and Andrew,
mm-hmm,
now in their 20s, almost 30s.
Yeah.
And you were the house father.
Yeah.
Tell me all the duties that you performed besides, what did you do for 5 years? Or was it 5 years?
Yeah, it was 5 years. You know, really, Wayne, it was answering a lot of questions because they were you know, at that age, kids have a lot of questions. And
at what age now we're talking?
They were, Andrew would have been 13 months when I started.
Okay.
And he was five when he went to school then. So... yeah, so it was a lot of activities and a lot of chasing around, you know. We had a great time together, and we have a real close bond as a result of it, you know. We looked at it at the time, and we, Beth and I, both realized, you know, daycare certainly can work for people, and you can do a great job taking your kids to daycare. It just wasn't for us. And we were fortunate enough that we had enough flexibility in our jobs at the time that allowed me to do it. So
so you bonded with the boys, mm-hmm, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things when you're a stay-at-home mom or dad. I mean, did you do the laundry?
You're doing laundry. You're
cooking,
doing, yeah.
You know?
You're changing diapers. You're doing the whole bit, you know. And you're going into town and buying groceries. At that time, you know, it's changed a lot. This is more popular now than what it was in 1993. So, you know, I'd take the boys to preschool or whatever, and I'd be standing there with eight moms, you know, to pick them up. I was the only guy there, you know, but the people were really nice and they understood. It really gave me an opportunity to get to know people in Lake City. Otherwise, because we lived out in the country and we had moved there, we didn't know anybody. But I got to know a lot of the people in town that way. Businesses during that time, we put an addition onto the house, and with my woodworking background and my carpentry background, I spent a lot of time doing that. And so the boys were with me at the time. They didn't really help me; they were too small.
Yeah.
But I'd give them something to do, let them play in the sawdust or whatever while I was building. You know, so great time.
Did you have a plan in regards to dinners ready for Beth when she gets home and eat as a family and prepare the meals?
Yeah, you know, she was really great though, Wayne, because as you could understand, by 5 o'clock or whenever she'd come in, I'd about had it with the kids, right? Because they were, you know.
Yep.
And instead of coming home and saying, you know what, I've had a hard day at work, I need my time to, she'd say, get out of here now, the kids are mine. And so there'd be a lot of times when she'd make them supper or dinner at night when she got home, because she wanted her time with them too. So it was really a unique situation, and it worked out really well for
us.
Did
you socialize at all in those 5 years?
Not a lot. You know, we met some really nice people in Lake City through our church, and getting the boys into Sunday school, and we got to know some people that way. And then as the boys were in preschool, you know, we got to know some folks that way. But again, being from out of town and being out in the country, yeah, we were a little bit isolated. And then the fact that neither one of us worked in Lake City, Beth worked in Red Wing, and I was kind of spread out all over the country. And so it took us maybe a little bit longer to meet some people locally, but it was mainly through the church and through school that we did.
What church?
First Lutheran Church in Lake City.
I could have assumed that.
Yeah.
So when the boys were getting older and into high school, they weren't busy farming, so
no.
what were their activities that you had to attend?
Well, they didn't take after their dad. They aren't interested in mechanical things or anything like that. They were interested in sports.
Okay.
And so our oldest son Ben played all the sports, really, and he played basketball, football, and baseball. Andrew did the same. And so we were pretty busy chasing around, going to all the games, then I was already working in Rochester at the time, and I had a very understanding boss that would let me get out of there a little early to go see the 5th and 6th grade basketball games. Yeah. And, you know, I was on the phone a lot during those games. You know, I was standing behind the bleachers answering customer calls, that type of thing, but everybody kind of understood. So.
Was there two boys, 3 years apart?
Yep.
I would imagine there were some wrestling matches when they got a little bit older.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can clearly remember the bus dropping them off, you know, and at the end of the driveway about this time of year, maybe a little earlier, and you'd see two little guys walking down the driveway, but before they got there, all you saw was backpacks flying in the air and wrestling out on the ice. Somebody said something they weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they got along pretty good, but a little tough on furniture.
Was
right.
Ben or Andrew an outstanding athlete in one particular sport?
Ben was probably more interested in sports. He was a quarterback for the football team.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And yeah,
was that
so,
nine-man or regular?
You would have to ask me that. Now, I'm a spark plug guy, Wayne. I don't know. Whatever
okay.
Lake City is, nine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So you went to those games, kids
and
quarterback, and you had to be proud father.
Yeah, as long as they won, you know.
Well, okay. So now, you're financially stable, and things are going well for you and Beth and the boys, and you know that you want them to have a college education.
Yeah.
And why did you choose St. Olaf?
Well, my wife attended Concordia College up in Moorhead
okay.
for first 2 years, and then she finished at Jamestown. And We just really liked the arts. We just thought that if they had an opportunity and could get into a private school, a private university, we thought that'd be a good idea. And so didn't know if that was possible or not, but they both toured St. Olaf here and just really loved the experience and loved the campus, and so they both graduated.
Did they look at any others?
Oh yeah, we went to all the campuses. We went to St. Thomas and St. Olaf, Gustavus. I don't think we made it down to Decorah, to Luther.
Concordia?
Concordia, no.
Bethel?
Not Concordia. Not Bethel. Nope. Nope.
Carleton?
Nope, not Carleton. No. No.
So you are aware of St. Olaf by way of your church, I would assume.
Yeah, that and the proximity of the school to where we lived. Yeah, yeah.
So you had a senior and a freshman, or a senior and a sophomore.
We had two kids here for 2 years.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So what did you, when you came on Parents' Day or came to Northfield for whatever?
Yeah.
What did you think of the downtown area? Oh. You even drove through here when you were a kid.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. We love this town. We still do. In fact, even though our boys are both graduated from here, we still come back to Northfield on a regular basis. And sometimes we attend a chapel service on Sunday mornings here. We like to visit downtown here. There's a number of shops that Beth really loves and get some really nice restaurants here in town. And this is a great community. We really like Northfield a lot.
Have you ever been up for Defeat of Jesse James Days?
One time.
Oh.
One time.
How long ago?
I would say it would have been about 15 years ago.
I'm trying to see if I was still riding at that time. Probably not. No.
Okay.
No, I just retired from doing the bank raid reenactment.
Yeah, yeah.
That's quite a thrill, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's a great show, and we've been meaning to come back here for it. I come to your steam and gas engine show that out here.
Yeah,
that
Stundus got to give
us. That's Stundus. That's Stundus. Yep, yep.
That's a nice ground they
it
built.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I always thought, you know, our rodeo, maybe we should move it down there. They have so much room and it's easy access, but we want to keep the rodeo in town.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, you have 2,500 people after each rodeo. And
they got to go somewhere.
They
right?
walk. They can walk to the carnival, walk to the entertainment center. I'm old enough that I call it the beer tent. But now the proper thing is entertainment center. It is 6 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio. One of the things I was going to ask you, Brad Krabiel, is... do you have a hobby? And then I thought, well, you're going to say, yes, I do cabinet and woodworking. Do you have a hobby?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
I like to fly.
Fly?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm a private pilot.
Really?
And I have a little tiny old airplane that I fly and don't fly it nearly enough.
But what is it? A Cessna?
The Cessna 150.
A 150?
Yeah, a little small two-seater.
Little tail dragger?
It's got the wheel in the front. Yep.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that's my hobby.
And what's the furthest you've ever flown that? And do you take the kids and Beth up?
Well, yeah, they've all been up with me at different times, but I'd say probably 90% of the time, Wayne, I'm by myself. And that's why I have just a two-seater and not a four-seat airplane. And I suppose the farthest I've been is to Rapid City. I've flown to Rapid City.
That's
it. It's a long ways. Yeah.
You can do it on one tank?
No. I think I stopped in Huron or Pipestone or somewhere and put in fuel. Yeah.
Okay. I like airplanes.
It's not a very fast airplane.
Yeah.
You know.
So when you're going down, flying over a freeway, the traffic is...
Depending on where the wind's coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the traffic passes you.
Yeah. Well, what did Beth think of that? Or have you been doing it all your life?
Yeah, I've been doing it. I soloed when I was 17 years
old.
Oh,
for goodness sakes.
Yeah. So I'd already gotten bitten by that bug a long time before I met Beth. And she's been very understanding about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she... just dreams of the next opportunity she can go flying with me. She's not afraid to fly, but it's not something that she's really interested in, but she's very understanding.
Yeah. Well, so where do you keep it?
I keep it in Rochester, at the airport in Rochester.
Hmm. You ever use it to commute?
No.
I mean, what would you do if you...
I've used
where
it.
Would you drop it?
You know, when I fly, I typically fly over our farm and I fly out to my my old homestead out in southwest Minnesota. Once in a while for work, I'll use it if we have a client that I need to meet.
It's a nice write-off, I suppose.
Well, I can't write it off, but I can at least book the time.
The gas.
Yeah, yeah. It's just more of a convenience thing. I can get there quick, but I don't do that a lot. Don't do
my line. My neighbor across the street, my very nice neighbor, was a FAA guy.
Okay.
And
control tower guy?
Yeah. And he's retired, and he bought himself a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And he's taken me up a couple of times, and he just loves it. I mean, he's just into it. And then a guy by the name of John Larson, whom I've had on the show many times, has a biplane.
Wow.
And I can't remember. Stedman?
Stearman.
Stearman. And he's going to take me for a ride. And we didn't get it done last summer. But he flew the plane back from California.
Wow. Wow.
And it was cold. Cold, cold. And it was amazing. And then my wife, as a gift one time, gave me a couple of hours of flying in a PT-9, I think they called
sure.
it. Second World War
trainer. Yeah, World War II trainer. Yeah. Yeah.
And taught me how to do things, and then I literally did them.
Wow.
I mean, hammerhead yeah. and rolls, it's just exciting. You know, you want to get some speed, you got to bring her up and then down.
Yeah,
and
sure. bring her, but you enjoyed that.
Oh, loved it. Yeah. Just loved yeah. it. And then another guy had a biplane. I may have done an interview with him, but he took me out. And he said, you want to take over, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah. And then I wanted to do a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so, should I bring her up at 160 or 180? He said, no, no, here, let me take over. I said, oh. I said, well, can you do that? He said, no, I don't do that with people in the plane. I just fly.
You know,
I wanted to do all the crazy fun
things. Well, good for you.
You know, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
You know, it'd be quick. Oh, it'd
be
no,
quick.
That'd be maybe 5 seconds. You'd say, oh no, our Father who art in heaven. So I'm glad that you have that as a hobby. I suppose the kids, the boys, did you take them up one at a time?
Yeah, I took them up one at a time, and neither one of them are real interested in it either.
Okay.
But it's a kind of an acquired taste, you know. Either you like it. You obviously like it. I can tell by the look on your face when you're talking about
yeah.
airplanes.
Yeah.
You know.
They're exciting. They're exciting.
Yeah.
I found out that if I wanted to, they may have loosened the rules a little bit, but if you have diabetes, they really don't want you flying an airplane.
You're right. They have loosened up on it. They call it basic air med now, and assuming you haven't been declined a federal medical certificate, you can fly with your driver's license now from a health standpoint.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, maybe. It's never too
Maybe.
Late.
Maybe.
All right. Well, I see it's 11 o'clock, and it's time to take leave of our conversation. And Brad Crabill, you're the Chief Executive Officer and President of Home Federal Savings and Loan that has 14 offices.
That's correct. Thank you so much.
And has an interest in the symphony in Rochester. Airplane is your hobby, and you've had great fortune.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had a good life.
I've been blessed, yeah.
I've been blessed. Really,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
And you're a very nice man. I'm glad that you came up and visited with me today.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity, Wayne. It's really been a lot of fun.
And if you come across other interesting people in your run-ins with the folks down in Rochester, always welcome.
I'll send them your way.
All right. Thank you. That concludes the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. And tomorrow I'm going to have an interesting guest on, and I'm going to tell you his or her name. And let's see, John and Dahlia. I'm going to have two people. They're musicians. We're going to have a little bit of music tomorrow. Okay, by law, you have to identify your station 5 minutes either side of the hour. And so I will describe KYMN Radio. It's from Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on the AM dial since 1968. And now 95.1 FM, The One. And now I just take the computer here and I put the little arrows where they're supposed to be and push a button and say goodbye.
95.1 The One.